right. Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Monday's with Sandy Williams. So, Sandy, let's just get right at it. Saudi Arabia is slashing the oil prices. Production.
Yeah.
Is that coincidental, or what is the reason that they would be slashing the oil prices?
No,
the production.
They want to cut production because they want prices to go up. And there's been a slowdown in oil demand. And so the price of oil has fallen below $80 a barrel, the world price.
Right.
And that's kind of an important price point for a bunch of producers, including and maybe most specifically Russia. And so this was the OPEC Plus group that announced this. And OPEC Plus is the group that includes Russia and a couple of other producers, I think Venezuela. And so, this is just an effort on the part of the producers to take steps to increase the price of oil, since it's about the only product some of those countries produce. I think in that same process, I think the Emirates announced that they were going to actually increase production some, because there's a little bit of a controversy. See, OPEC operates like a big cartel, and they allocate production amongst the countries belonging to it, and the Emirates were unhappy with their allocation. So
the impact that generally has during the summer on a world right now that's facing some hard times, this will add an added burden on some people, right, including this country.
Well, sure. I mean, these people are not fools. They understand they understand the relationship between the price of oil and the price of gasoline. They also understand that summer is the time when the demand goes up, and so they would want to reduce production, or at least announce a reduction in production at the time when demand is a little higher, so that it will have the effect of increasing the price of oil. So this is very purposeful, and I don't think it's purposeful necessarily intended to erode the political posture of for instance, Joe Biden. Price of gas is going to go up under his watch. I don't think they're doing it for that reason. They're doing it for the reason that monopolists do things, which is they want to fatten the money that flows into their pocket.
This is as you stated, they're going to cut 1 million barrels per day to start with, and the effect of that will be immediate, right?
A million barrels a day sounds like a lot, but in the terms of the total production, it's a relatively small percentage. But the oil spot market reacts to that kind of news pretty quickly. And so, and the price of a commodity like oil is set at the margin, meaning that it's kind of that last barrel of oil that's sold. At what price is that purchased? And that has an impact on the price of all of the oil sold. So, what they're trying to do is affect the futures market and the immediate spot market by making the announcement.
So the gasoline that's already in the ground at filling stations, can they raise the price of that, or do they have to wait for?
Well, there's no law that affects the pricing. So, the deal is that there is profiteering that goes on when the price when the price of gasoline goes up. The inventory of gasoline in the ground has an historic cost, and the historic cost of that gasoline doesn't go up. But when the price of the newly generated gallon of oil and gasoline goes up, then that gas in the ground gets to be worth more. And so the people who own the filling stations want to jack up the price so that they actually get an increased profit spread on the gasoline that they bought and put in the ground. Now, how long does that gas in the ground last? It's probably only a week or two that they've got at each station. But for that week or two, and during a period of rising prices, that gas in the ground ends up creating higher profits for stations.
So because, for people who may not know, there's been some changes to the scheduling on WAUK, and now the show is 2 hours as opposed to three, so we're going to jump around subjects as quickly as we can, Sandy, and try to cover an array of things. U.S. releases video showing close call with Chinese destroyer. What are we doing?
Well, in fact, you know, and it's a he said, she said situation.
Right.
China says, no, you guys started it in this little contest between these ships. You know, we don't tell that part of the story. We only tell the part in which their ship came within a supposedly 120 meters or 150 yards of our ship. This stuff kind of goes on all the time, and it's
one-upmanship. Is that what it is?
Well, and it's testing each other's capacity, I guess. It's showing each other, you know, the steely look in your eyes.
It sounds kind of insane, Sandy.
It is kind of insane. It's you know, we just had a near
miss
aircraft with the Russians. We have near misses with the Chinese sometimes, but we've been through the whole Cold War. We would have this kind of stuff. You remember in Top Gun?
Oh yeah,
yeah. The situation where he's flying inverted and flipping a bird to the Russian plane that they're just toying with each other. And that actually, that kind of stuff has gone on. I guess it's kind of like when you have guns, you want to play with them. When you have boats, you want to play with them. Planes play, you know.
Yeah. So you know, I just to me, Sandy, it just a Navy ship is not a toy.
No.
Right?
Well, not only is it not a toy, but a collision between a naval ship from China and the United States in this context of purposeful conduct would be a big deal, you know? And both sides would try to make something big out of it. China has asserted that we are in their waters trying to stir the pot. And, you know, maybe we are. You know, the problem I have with the news we get is I'm just cynical about it. I don't think we get the whole news. I don't think anyone in any country gets the whole news. But I just don't think we all should drink the Kool-Aid quite so quickly.
You know, Sandy, it's frightening to those of us who know that this game that's being played is a dangerous one. And maybe before, because I'm kind of caught between, it looks like we are trying to finally come to a point of reason with China, part of the United States. And maybe it's, I don't know if it's the Pentagon or whoever it is, but they're trying to say, hey, let's kind of tone these things down. We've been kind of, you know, hyperbole. Let's bring some sense to these things, and you can kind of notice we're not hearing as much as we were hearing about Taiwan and all those kind of things. They kind of are ramping that down they should, right?
Yeah. I think there is an effort to tamp down the Taiwan stuff, because there was no question that when we made a big deal about Taiwan, it made it necessary for China to flex its muscles about Taiwan, and so, you know, the chicken and egg. Who started that problem? And so if we backed off, clearly China has also indicated some capacity to back off. They aren't encircling Taiwan. They aren't doing the things they did, which clearly they were doing in response to what we were doing. And so, I just think, you know, this yin-yang aspect of international affairs, Americans should just understand that we are a major yin, and the yangs all react to us just in the same way that we claim we're reacting. You know, almost none of these near mishaps with naval vessels occur in the waters off the United States.
So you just read my mind.
Yeah. I mean, you know, these near mishaps happen in the foreign waters, in the territory immediately adjoining these other countries. And so, you know, if it happened in the waters offshore from us, we'd feel much differently about it if Chinese vessels were sailing around right just off San Diego, and kind of raising hell with the American ships as they left the San Diego harbor, the naval ships. And so I just think we need to stand back and look at things a little more objectively.
You know, Sandy, there's so many things to cover, and unfortunately, you know, we're not going to have as much time to deal with that, especially on today. but certainly we will on Friday. But I just think, you know, looking at so many of these things, and the one local thing that I did want us to discuss and cover, Sandy, is the revenue sharing for the state that appears to be in trouble because the Senate and Senator LeMahieu doesn't believe he has the votes, and it looks like the revenue sharing is going to go to a referendum. Sandy, what happens if a referendum is voted down the city of Milwaukee? You're a guy who knows state politics. What happens if Milwaukee does not get the resources that is necessary?
Well, first of all, using a referendum on a tax issue like this with so little knowledge on the part of the populace about what it's all about is really just politicians ducking their responsibility, kicking the can off, and with some knowledge as to what the likelihood is, because a population, first of all, is a little less likely to vote for a tax increase on itself without knowledge as to why they're doing it. So if maybe there will be time to greatly educate the public about what the process is, what the risks are associated with not obtaining the tax relief that's necessary, and the history behind it. It's because, you know, the history behind the problems of the Milwaukee pension plan, for instance, are much like the same problems that the federal debt ceiling problem, right? The pension is already committed. It's already the result of the prior action of a bunch of county boards. It's already the result of collective bargaining that existed between the firemen and the police and the teachers. And so, you know, it's just a bill that needs to get paid.
All right, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. It's Monday. Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back.
Tomorrow, temperatures reach up.
You can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. So, Sandy, I was asking you off the air, and we have to spend some time with this because Senator LeMahieu, who's in charge of things on the state Senate, basically said that he doesn't have the votes to be able to override kind of what the House, the legislature has put up. And he's concerned that what's going to wind up happening is that this decision on revenue is going to wind up and taxes are going to wind up on a referendum that stands a chance of not passing. And I was asking you how these different things work. You mind telling the people what?
Well, yeah. I mean, the referendum is in my mind, a way that politicians are ducking their responsibility, asking the taxpayers to vote about tax increases without much knowledge. There'll be a bunch of education that will, I suspect, happen in the prior to the referendum time period. But we all know from referendums on ballots how complex they are and how hard it would be to line up a lot of votes associated with it. But the only referendum that seems to win easily is the one related to marijuana,
yeah,
which the public seems to be quite unified about. Now, in this case, you know, I describe the federal situation with respect to the debt ceiling as being political theater, and I think it was, because the implications for that were going to be felt by everyone. Every congressman was going to suffer. I'm concerned that in Wisconsin, this particular controversy, while it feels like political theater, it isn't, because every state senator and every assemblyman does not feel the the implications of the problems that would be experienced in Milwaukee. I mean, while I think that the state of Wisconsin will suffer mightily if the city of Milwaukee becomes less of a jewel in the crown, because it is the, between Madison, Milwaukee, and Green Bay, those are the heartthrobs
of the state.
But because we have had this urban-rural kind of a conflict ongoing so long, there's a lot of knee-jerk politics out there that says, you know, wants to just kind of hand the problems to Milwaukee and watch them suffer. So suffering from this would be very problematic. It would increase the cost of debt to the city probably forever or for a very long time if the city has to actually go into a receivership kind of a situation because it can't pay its bills. The irony is that the state is trying to impose more police officers on the city of Milwaukee as part of this whole deal. And the main reason for this big overhang of financial problems we have relates to the pensions, which are primarily associated with the police and fire employees. And so, wow, you know, it's hypocrisy probably at its worst, but I do worry about it. And the implications for Milwaukee would be quite profound financially. Milwaukee has long had some of the highest credit ratings for its municipal debt in the country. It for a long time was sort of the gold standard. And now here we are kind of recklessly heading in a different direction, following what, Chicago down the
rabbit hole. But you know, Sandy, the part of it that I don't understand is if the Republican convention is coming in 2024, and it's in Milwaukee, it's not going to change, it's going to be in Milwaukee, it's a reflection of the state of Wisconsin if this thing doesn't come off right in Milwaukee. Is it safe to say that?
Well, of course. And the ability to attract business to the state of Wisconsin will be seriously affected by governmental financial instability. It's one of the reasons in Chicago, I mean, Wisconsin's business development program has thrived in large part because Illinois has been on the financial brink for this time, and lots of businesses have either relocated from Illinois or decided to locate in Wisconsin rather than Illinois as the result of all that problem. And now this is like a self-inflicted wound. How many toes would we want to shoot off in this process?
You know, Sandy, I can't help but think about you and I live in or around Milwaukee, and in Milwaukee, the last thing it needs. I was at an event the other day with the chief of police, and shootings are down in the city, and murders are down in the city. We're seeing some major changes in those things, which is what we were all asking for, and this could turn around overnight if the resources aren't there.
Well, sure. And just, you know, I just think the rest of the state needs to sober up and realize that it's not us against them. It's not them against us. It's Milwaukee's a very powerfully integral part of Wisconsin. Means a lot to the rest of Wisconsin. And if you actually do the financial analysis of contributions from the Southeast Wisconsin region to the state as compared to what the state contributes to it, I think that those kind of analyses all show that the Southeast Wisconsin region is a powerful contributor to the revenue and to the financial situation of the state of Wisconsin. So this is misplaced they.
Yeah, and clearly something that's, you know, we got to figure out a way to get this worked out, because, you know, I don't want to see the alternative to this. And that's the fact that the city goes into receivership. I don't know how that – none of us can really talk about how that plays out, but it's not something we really want to see.
No. The decisions then get made not by taxpayers. They get paid – they're made by creditors, essentially, and they get imposed upon the city. And this is something we can grab a hold of. The revenue is out there, you know, and particularly in the current situation with the huge surplus. Now – you know, I think people ought to examine, and that the state has a perfect right to examine how the revenue requirement came up. But I think that examination would reveal that it came up in a way that they'd have trouble fighting about.
All right, got to go to a break. Bill, I see you. 844-967-2789 is the number. We'll be right back.
BelongingBeginsWithUs.org.
You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. It means Mondays with Sandy Williams. Let's go to the phone lines and Bill from Oconomowoc. Good morning, Bill. How are you? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Good morning, Earl. Say on that shared revenue or revenue that Milwaukee should be getting. Now, I want to make sure I understand this correctly and don't misspeak, but I believe we would have had the amount of money for Milwaukee had not shared revenue been attacked during the Walker regime. Now, if I'm wrong, say so. But assuming that's part of the problem, and if we were to develop an intelligent, like, spreadsheet on this, which I don't think would be that difficult, showing how it used to be and showing how it is now, and we have this surplus, I would lay that right in Robin Voss's lap, if I'm correct on how this all happened, and say, okay, now you have the chance to take care of Milwaukee. Will you step up to the plate, or will you defer this to some of the people that pay you to vote their way?
Well, number one, he is taking care of Milwaukee the way he wants to take care of it, which is horrible. Sandy, you want to respond at all?
Well, no, I mean, I think the problem is that the rest of the state
feels the same way.
No, feels like they're taking care of Milwaukee. And I think that that's just semantically, Bill, a troublesome way, because actually I think Milwaukee's only getting what it deserves and what would be smart for the state of Wisconsin in terms of how they invest their dollars and share their dollars because of the extreme importance of Southeast Wisconsin to the entire state. And the amount of revenue that's generated for not just for the economy, but also for the state out of Southeast Wisconsin in terms of taxes paid. And so I think a spreadsheet would, I think facts, if the facts were displayed in a manner that were understandable, this decision would be a no-brainer, and it could maybe help dissolve some of the rural us versus them thinking. But right now, there's prevalent in the state house a view that everyone who isn't a representative from Milwaukee County in the Milwaukee metro area is basically being asked to support the troublesome issues and problems that exist in Milwaukee that are costing a lot of money.
But furthermore, don't you think, though, this started with the Republicans changing it around during the Walker
era? I'm confident that the tax sharing changes that were made under Walker moved money away from the Milwaukee metro area and to the rest of the state. So that, yes, I'm confident that a spreadsheet would demonstrate that had those changes not been made, the financial situation in Milwaukee would be far different than it is today. I'm not capable of understanding the specific numbers. And like I said, my experience in state government was that revenue sharing was much harder than integral calculus in terms of wrapping your brain around all of the implications of it. And the Fiscal Bureau, when they would try to describe the process, you would get lots of pages of information.
Go ahead,
Bill, quickly.
Okay, real quick. So, Sandy, if I understand you correctly, southeastern Wisconsin, Milwaukee specifically, is a big revenue generator, but it's not a shared revenue receiver. Am I correct? through
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I think the case that Milwaukee could and should make for itself and should make it better is that Southeast Wisconsin, including, and see, Milwaukee is what drives Southeast Wisconsin. And so you need to take more than, and the problem Milwaukee has always had is that the municipal boundary of Milwaukee doesn't encompass all of the value that the city of Milwaukee provides to the region. And it's really much more of a regional border. You know, Mequon would be nothing without Milwaukee. Oconomowoc would be not anywhere near what it is without Milwaukee. And so the whole region is dependent upon Milwaukee. So what needs to be analyzed is the Southeast region and understanding that Milwaukee is the aortal passageway for everything that happens in the region.
Hey, Bill, thank you very much for the call. Really appreciate it. So Sandy, you know, because of the shortage of time, you're going to jump around. Russia says it thwarted major Ukrainian offensive. I guess the beginning of the long-awaited offensive with Ukraine is underway. Your thoughts?
Well, again, like I said, the day February 23rd, whenever the war started a year ago, I said when the war starts, truth ends. You know, Ukraine is denying that they've started the offensive yet, said this is a disinformation campaign. We don't have war correspondents on the ground anymore because we don't have media that's, I guess, capable of generating the kind of revenue and investment that it would take to put people on the ground.
Is that the reason?
I don't understand the reason, because in every major war,
there's always been those correspondents.
There's been correspondents who could feed us the actual
right.
truth, right? And now we're dependent on press releases from Russia and press releases from Ukraine to tell us what's happening. Come on. I mean, neither of us should drink the Kool-Aid from either of those press releases. And what we need to do is figure out what's really going on. I mean, Zelensky has announced that there's going to be an offensive and it's going to start soon. Whether it started, whether Russia's thwarting it, whether Ukraine is winning it, you know, wow. We need to get some database that we can rely upon to understand all that. And right now, I'm from Missouri, as they say.
So Sandy, it's I thought that maybe it was the dangers of the war, but there were correspondents in all the other wars, so that can't be the reason.
No, that's not. I don't think that is the reason, and I don't know whether the governments have essentially refused to provide any protection whatever to them or what the issue is, but. You know, the lack of actual trustworthy war correspondents. There's only, you know, Al Jazeera, a couple of the real independent news organizations seem to have people on the ground that report things. But right now, here it is, a war that in modern, you know, 2023, and we're basically left with TikTok entries
yeah.
from both sides.
Yeah, it is. It is pretty ridiculous, Sandy. No question. Let me ask you, about, we haven't heard much lately about the default of banks. Remember we had,
yeah.
Has that stabilized apparently?
Well, the value of bank stock has more or less stabilized. The regional banks took it on the chin because it was viewed that regional banks were more susceptible to this kind of bank run that was the result of having sizable, you know, the whole basis for it ultimately, there were two bases for it. One was that the interest rates went up and a lot of banks had invested their capital in treasury instruments that had 5 or 10 year maturities. And when interest rates go up, the value of those treasuries, because they're paying 1% and the interest prevailing goes up to 5 or 6%, the value of that treasury goes way down. And so the capital of those banks was much less than they had thought it would be when they made the investment. That was reason number one. Reason number two was that the FDIC insures deposits in excess of $250,000. Insures deposits up to $250,000. Many banks have large deposits from corporations and others as the result of having to cover their payrolls and other things, vastly in excess of $250,000, all of which is uninsured. Some banks, and particularly regional banks, were finding that they had 50 60, 70, even 70% of their deposits were so large that they were uninsured. So those uninsured deposits are more likely to fly out of the bank if they decide that, gee, that bank might be teetering a little bit. I better get my money out, get it down to that $250,000 guarantee level. And so that also caused a flight. And the people who were suffering that most were regional banks. That went on for a while. It seems to have abated. And so, you know, banks are, by definition, fragile institutions. That FDIC guarantee is there to make them less fragile, but no bank of any size is going to have all of its deposits less than $250,000 because it doesn't take such a very big company that needs to have its deposits much in excess of that to meet its payroll, to meet its obligations. And so I think confidence in banking has improved, and I think that that problem is not the cliff that people worried it might be.
You know, Sandy, the 2024 election in when are you throwing your hat in as a Republican? Because Chris Christie's coming.
Yeah. Marianne Williamson has been in for some while now.
Who?
Marianne Williamson. I get text messages from her raising money.
Yeah. Mike Pence is coming.
Yeah.
Others are coming.
DeSantis is in. Trump is in.
And
Rod Scott.
And Tim Scott. And Trump has 45% of this right now, and all the rest of the people add up to about another 45%, and that includes DeSantis. Man, it seems pretty clear that he's, you know, he's not going away, is he?
Well, he's not going away, although, you know, these documents, you know, now, you know.
Right.
And again, we're left to rely on leaking information, which might or might not have any merit. But some of the leaked information suggests that this document thing might be more flames. There might be more flames than just smoke there, that there could be a serious problem for him. And if there is, I mean, if he's got top secret documents that he was mishandling purposefully, I think that would burn his feathers badly. Icarus, you know, got too close to the sun.
Hey, you know, I love the analogy. His feathers got, you know, but Sandy, here's...
In fact, when you think about the feathers, you think about his hair getting too close to the fire.
But here's
talk
what
about
I,
hair on fire.
Here's what I could never understand. Why would he even want those things?
Those documents?
Yeah.
Well, I know. That's why they're... I think people believe that there was purpose behind it, and the purpose.
But what would the brag?
Well, bragging, but you know, here some of it was spur. You know, there's apparently a file about Macron that was quite, and some other. You know, there were files on
blackmail,
that kind of stuff. I mean, you know, compromise, so you know, who knows what it is? Well, you know, I don't want to speculate about facts,
right?
But this, Mr. Smith, the prosecutor's going to handle this, and at some point we'll find out. And you know, the current kind of leaking smoke would suggest that it might be some pretty important stuff.
So what I don't understand, Sandy, I know he's different than all the rest of us, but to have to deal with that kind of stress every day in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And still ignore those things, his life has to be in total turmoil,
well,
right?
Except his life.
I mean, how can he sleep?
His life experience has been that he is Teflon Man.
Yeah.
You know, we used to say Ronald Reagan was Teflon Man, but nothing has ever stuck to Donald. Nothing that he has done has ever stuck to Donald Trump. I mean, he's been able to skate through bankruptcies. He's been able to get refinanced. He always lands on his feet. Who knows what's going on behind the scenes? But, you know, if your life experience is that nothing bad happens to me, regardless of what I do, you can get pretty reckless.
The average person's life, they couldn't deal with that kind of stress because,
He's not an average person, and, you know, the psychologists have... Plenty of psychologists said this guy's a malignant narcissist, which means basically that he thinks he's God. You know, that's it.
Yeah.
This most simplified version of that psychosis, thinks he's God.
Well said. 844-967-2789 is the number. It's Monday with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. I'm the loveliest one you'll
see. Try to see it my way. Do I have to keep on talking till I can go on? While you see it your way.
All right. Welcome back to the Early Evening Show. Mondays with Sandy Williams. You can join us at 844-967-2789. You know, Sandy, we're going to work it out. we have to work it out. While we're moving through all these different parts, Sandy, does it appear that some of these things are kind of working themselves out bit by bit, piece by piece? If you look a month or two ago, it, for all the world, looked like there's so many different things going on in the country. Things have kind of settled down a little bit.
Well, am I
seeing that wrong?
No, you aren't. I think in many respects, problems cure themselves like the common cold. You know, you don't have to take medicine to cure the cold. It just goes away after you know, the doctor can say fluids and aspirin, but if you ignored his advice, it would still go away. A lot of what goes on in the economy and in the world and in the American situation will reach an equilibrium, and we can attribute that to the government's conduct, but it probably would have happened anyway, like the common cold. And so, particularly in our economy, we seem to keep perking along, and we have hiccups, we have bumps, but so far, the economy has been performing, you know, quite admirably. And even in the jobs area, it has. And I think that has, in many respects, what's been carrying us through other situations and other issues. I'm more concerned. I want our foreign policy to get right, because I'm more concerned about what it could actually mean. And I'm concerned about the middle class family, the median family, and its problems. So, you know,
now that part of it, Sandy,
we get through the bumps, but we don't cure any of these underlying problems, which are festering sores that could become terribly, terribly problematic.
Yeah, I do think that families in their struggles that aren't going to get any easier. I don't see a point, Sandy, where, you know, these high costs of food and heat and all those things, then I don't see where that's going to be rescinded anywhere.
If you look at child daycare, you look at education, you look at healthcare, the things that really need solving are hidden, not even talked about when we spend all of our time talking about social issues that, while important to some people, this whole transsexualism and the huge discussion and attention paid to it, the spotlights are off on stuff that isn't going to solve these real serious underlying problems for middle class America.
Yeah, it really is, Sandy, and I'll tell you, just based on the conversations we've had over the last 6 months, we're almost 6 months into 2023, and I think you can exhale. We can exhale a little bit. Is it, Sandy, there's so much news that we can't help but address issues? Maybe the people who aren't so caught up in all the different subjects and things that we talk about, maybe they have it right, because there's so much stuff on. If you follow all those things, you're going to see the sky falling.
You mean you have to look at the forest,
yeah,
not the trees.
It's another great analogy.
Yeah.
I can kind of see that, right?
Well, yes, I think the internet allows us to get totally diverted by all kinds of details, anecdotal stuff that is not really representative of broad issues that we need to be addressing. It takes leadership, either from the news media or from the political leadership, but it takes leadership to focus us on the important issues. And we can say that Grassroots America needs to do it, but Grassroots America needs to have leaders who can speak for it and can be its representative, because we can't speak in 1,000 voices or 1 million or 300 million voices and be heard well. And so I think what America needs is the next generation of leaders. And that's my problem with this presidential campaign. And that's my problem with the current environment. It's really hard to list who those next leaders are who will manifestly lead us out of the major problems. Not this throwing stones politically, getting attention, getting tomorrow's news. That's what the Republican candidates are going to be doing, is trying to figure out how to out DeSantis, and DeSantis is trying to figure out how to out Trump. And all of that involves deflection from important issues.
Because I've been listening to some of the others who are coming into. Well, CJ, quickly, here he is. Quickly, CJ, you only got a couple minutes.
Well, I'd gladly hold over.
There is no holdover. There's a new segment, new lineup all throughout our radio operations, and so we're on from 8 to 10 now. So,
I'm going to miss you. But, it's funny to listen to you guys, but what about Mr. Kennedy? Your candidate won't even debate. Your candidate, your party, won't even look at the other candidate. They're already.
Hey, CJ, did you hear Donald Trump say he doesn't want to debate any of the Republican guys? Do you know that?
That's okay.
We'll
decide on that. We're talking. How about your party? Debate anybody?
Yeah. Sandy, you want to try to?
No, that's all right. They're probably, there's talk and then there's action. We'll find out if there'll be a debate. We'll find out what the poll standings are as we get closer. I, for one, think debate's a good idea. I think we ought to find out as much as we can about candidates.
Sandy, we got to make the adjustments like everybody. And, man, it's going to be hard to
float like a butterfly, sting like a bee.
Rumble, young man, rumble.
Yeah, that's what we're going to do.
All right, we got to go. Thank everybody who made the show go. I mean, it's the reality of, radio. No matter how much things change, they can still stay the same, whatever that means. We'll be back with Sandy on Friday. I'll be back on tomorrow. You've been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. See you later.
Chance that we might